Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
With guest co-host
T Pangolin. So how do we do this? Do I just kind of give an introduction or whatever? How does everything go down?
Go ahead, Madge, and explain.
What?
You're the newest regular co-host. Do something productive around here.
Yeah, just make fun of Dan, and you're good.
This is episode 192. Joining us today, Daniel?
It's February, and it's not quite fabulous.
Madgen.
Fabulous.
Makalua.
Nope. I need more caffeine for being fabulous. Yep.
And the Mian Team.
This land is my land. Your land is my land.
Now, if you're not exactly sure who I am, my name is Jet, also known on the internet as T Pangolin. If you're not sure exactly who I am, then I don't really blame you. I kind of look at myself in the mirror every day and ask that same question, which is usually followed by around 15 minutes of me crying in the shower, not because I'm having an existential crisis, because I don't know who I am, but because I got shampoo in my eyes. I bought the game after Gods and Kings was released, so whilst I am not really a long-term fan of the series, it doesn't really take away about how sort of passionate I am about the game. Once Brave New World was released, I kind of got into the modding community.
Question.
Yes.
You talk about the game, but what game are you talking about anyway?
Oh, yes, I'm talking about Age of Empires 3 War Chiefs.
The
expansion, of course. Although I did mention Gods and Kings and Brave New World, you know.
Yeah, but you didn't actually mention the game, you just mentioned the title of the expansion, so how are people going to know what it is that you're talking about?
Mega Bear Fan has yet another topic up, and of course there's various threads all over the place where he gets a little deeper into Indonesia and kind of gets all the points out there. The nice thing about this article is he does list out all of the different pieces of it. So for the Chris Swordsman, he actually writes out all the different unique promotions that they get, so you can actually see what they are rather than having to kind of guess. And he even goes so far as to give you the UI, the little icon, so you can tell what it is right off the mark. It's very nice that way. The only thing in there that I might not agree with is the restlessness of May Attack Twice stacking with Blitz, because every single time we see something like that, you don't actually get to attack for 3 per turn. It's usually just plus 1 per turn, and it doesn't stack, kind of like Logistics and Blitz don't stack very well, or the Chokonu bonus and Blitz don't stack. Otherwise, Spice Islanders, of course, is that you get your free nutmeg, clove, or peppercorns in your city if you land on an island or some other non-continental space. Basically, one-tile islands start becoming slightly more useful because you can actually set up and get free copies of resources that absolutely no one else has. And, of course, you do get 2 of them, so you can have one for yourself and one to trade, or trade both and keep going. Now, of course, because of the way the mechanics of the game work, because these are luxuries that only exist as part of the city, you can't raise or purposely destroy these cities. So that does become a problem if an Indonesian AI randomly drops one of these cities in a not-so-healthy location close to you.
One-tile Arctic island.
Yeah, but at least it'll have luxuries. I'm more thinking that one-tile island just off your coast, because it doesn't count for distance. It's right beside your other city.
For me, Indonesia, it's one of my favorite civs based purely on an aesthetic standpoint. Whenever Indonesia's in my game, I can't help but admire the color scheme, the leader screen, all the icons like the Candy and the Chris Swordsman. And whilst they might not be based in reality, because they're pretty non-existent, the Chris Swordsman and the Candy doesn't even look like that in real life, I just really, really like the look of Indonesia.
Indonesia, it looks great, but it's full of shit.
It looks great, yeah. But where it fails just so hilariously is that it is the largest thassalocracy, which means that it was the largest naval empire. It's literally spawned thousands and thousands of islands, and I just feel like there's such a lack of a naval flair, like Venice has, and Venice does that purely really, really well, because it forces you to go down optics, and it forces you to go to compass to get that unique.
You wish that you and had a thing like Polynesia does with the islands.
Yeah, I wish that maybe settlers could embark, or civilians can embark, or give a boost to naval production, but right now it just doesn't have any.
The thing about it is you know, you can only have so many naval flavored civs that are basically the same. So, I mean, when it comes to design of the individual civs, they have to look at a variety of factors, including what's already in the game. So making yet another Islander type civ with similar focus wouldn't enhance the game. I'm happy with what Indonesia gets, with the exception of maybe the Chris Swordsman not really being that useful most of the time, or at least on higher difficulty levels. The promotions that they do get are quite nice, if you get them.
Yeah,
if you get the good ones and not the crap
ones. Yeah, the fun thing with the Chris Swordsman is that there are two bad, well, bad is questionable, but two bad promotions that you might random. Otherwise, all the rest of them are good. The general strategy with Chris Swordsman is you pump them out. If you get a promotion you don't like, you just hand it off to a city state or delete it and go again until you get something good. Things like ambition are kind of, you get good and bad stuff out of it. Ambition giving you 50% combat bonus when you attack, but you get minus 20% combat penalty when defending. That's not too bad. You definitely don't want enemy blade unless, of course, you're going for the achievement where you take an enemy city with a Chris Swordsman that has enemy blade. And, of course, evil spirits are just bad.
that just goes for everything.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Mega Bear's fan says in his article, if you get a unit like that, then you can just use it as cannon fodder.
Well, there's that too. But given how long it takes to build and go, I'd rather not waste an iron on a unit like that for that long.
Well, yeah, it depends on when you're going to be able to use it as cannon fodder. If you're active in a war, then okay, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I'd delete and just spend a couple turns getting a new one.
I believe there's also the issue of the lack of versatility when it comes to Indonesia. Unique ability basically dictates that you should go on and explore other islands, but if you're playing on a continents or a Pangaea map, usually it's going to be a bit harder to, especially if you're going tall, so usually it's going to be a bit harder to get your cities up and running if you try to go by the dictations of the UA, which is basically what most users do, so they can probably utilize it.
Yeah, it's like Polynesia. Indonesia is map dependent, and it's also, but to me, the biggest thing about Indonesia is it's so unfocused, as Mega Bear's fan talks about.
Yeah, that's right.
Although, if we got rid of the absolutely bad promotion for the Chris Swordsman, which are the evil spirits, and then the other one, which is kind of bad, and I say kind of bad if you're not using it correctly, like you don't want to use it as defense, you want to go on the offense. If we got rid of that, then actually that would remove a lot of my criticism of Indonesia, despite the fact that they're unfocused. You could also say, well, the fact that they're unfocused could actually be used to an advantage in the sense that it's not so dependent on one particular skew.
No, I mean, Indonesia does just fine on a Pangaea. Now, it's not map dependent like, say, I don't know, England, where the only thing you get useful on a Pangaea is your longbows, and then your unique ability and everything else goes boring because there's not much naval combat. But no, Indonesia, there are islands on a Pangaea map. Also depends on what type of Pangaea map you get. Sometimes there's more islands than there should be, but otherwise there are definitely islands there. The only one you would have a problem with is one of the set type maps where it's not got the wraparound border.
Like Four Corners?
Well, even Four Corners can sometimes get islands in there. Think of the plains maps, stuff like that, where there's like that tiny piece of water in the corner. So yeah, only on those ones where there's really definitely no islands would you have a problem with Indonesia. Otherwise, there always will be islands somewhere. They just might not be the best ones.
Mega Bear's fan article talks about recommendations for religion and social policies and wonder recommendations. My favorite part of the article is about playing against Indonesia. Just cause.
I feel like he's in all of my games recently.
Mega Bear's fan talks about that, you know, Indonesia's spice islands make tempting targets. If you're playing an aggressive, hostile game against them, try to avoid conquering Indonesia until they have at least one or two of their spice islands settled, and then capture them, turning their bonus into yours. If you delay your attack against Indonesia until they have some overseas colonies, means that you will almost certainly be going up against their Chris, or units upgraded from the Chris. The sheer variety of effects on the Chris can make Indonesia a daunting enemy on the battlefield, especially against a human opponent, as they effectively have up to 8 different unique units, 6 of which are beneficial, and all promotions are retained upon upgrade. I think that's pretty can make Indonesia a daunting enemy.
Oh yeah, I've seen Indonesia AI do quite well when they have iron in the game. They can be pretty annoying in the early game. And then, yes, of course, all the promotions stick around. So if they've made a bunch of Chris swordsmen, they will have some hyper-powered longswords and above if they manage to keep them. But yeah, Spice Islands are nice if you're not Indonesia.
If war isn't your style or would be prohibitively costly, then try to take advantage of Indonesia's existence in the game by offering to buy their unique luxuries. That's often what I do. If they won't sell to you at a reasonable price and you have enough influence in the World Congress, you can try proposing a ban on Indonesia's unique luxuries.
Yeah, it's just not as effective as banning like a monopoly on something big where they can make a lot. Because, I mean, they really are only going to sell off the one extra. They're not going to sell both off. So you're only really hitting them for one trade deal versus, you know, if they had a monopoly on dyes, then you'd stop like 8 or 9, potentially, depending on how many civs are in the game.
Yeah, I'm talking about the spite factor.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's purely for spite, obviously. But to get it back to the candy, because we didn't quite cover it, the 25% great people generation in the city is same thing as the garden. So the two faith for each world religion that has at least one follower in the city. And unlike the garden, candy doesn't have to be built to next to a river or a lake. Hehe. Actually makes it slightly more useful than it was right out of the gate. The extra two faith for each world religion that has at least one follower in the city is nice, as long as there's lots of religions in the neighborhood. When in doubt, just send trade routes to the religious centers, the holy cities of everybody else, and that'll pull in. Usually you can get one follower just based off a single trade route without them overpowering it, just because trade routes do pull the religious pressure, and you can usually get a single one. So
it's also worth noting that if you are trying to get religions from somebody else and you have founded your own religion, don't pick the religious trait that makes your city spread 30% further away. Otherwise, that's kind of going to nullify the chance. Yours is going to spread so far that they're hardly going to get into yours.
Yeah, you have to kind of go opposite of what you normally would do, or the extra pushback from religions, or cleaning out religions faster, some of those bonuses that you can pull out. You definitely want to dodge those ones for playing Indonesia if you want that extra faith. As for the chat, Aaron asked, is he wrong in thinking Indonesia is rather strong civ for going wide? I would say yes, it is a strong civ for going wide, and that's how they tend to work out.
Settle your cities on islands quickly. That means you still get a pretty good happiness boost, so you can that can kind of facilitate you going wide anyway.
Yeah, and then you trade your extra copy for a copy of a luxury you don't have, and that's right. That doubles up the amount of cities that you can get pretty quickly.
That's why playing Indonesia on a true start location map is so fun.
Island, island, island.
Island, 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 island.
If you're not doing the religion game, then yeah, candy is great. If you're trying to do the religion game, eh. Indonesia, especially for the cursed swordsman, if you don't have iron, well, at least you have luxuries. If you can find islands.
How many trade posts do you build in your cities? And yes, we're still talking about, you know, Civilization 5, because in real life you probably don't have a city of your own yet. Am I right?
I don't know. I'm considering turning my bedroom into like a micronation.
And I'm sure you'll have micro success with that.
Yes.
From Lorwyn, I'm always running short on gold, it feels like. These days I've been trying out manual tile assignment and manual specialist. It works quite nicely. But the problem for me is that I don't improve many trading posts in my cities. I often pick order ideology, so I choose to emphasize mines over hill trading posts. And I built farms in the beginning and mid portions of the game because they're available, unlike trading posts which come from guilds. What I'm lacking always is gold per turn with order-wide sprawling empire. There's simply too much building maintenance for all the science buildings, etc. And roads, too. And units. I know that the grassland tile can sustain itself with the trade post improvement. Problem becomes when you have lots of plains land, or when you have many hill mines nearby that you want to work in the future after having grown more population. For social policies, I went tradition, patronage, rationalism. I was surrounded by militaristic city-states in a corner of a map. Those city-states were also on hills. Okay, well, that's just basics here. He talks about, you know, trading posts becoming available at guilds. Yes, so now you get +1 gold from desert, on desert, grassland, plains, and tundra. And then when you get to the economics technology in the Renaissance, you get +1 more gold from them. And my mention of that was not just an excuse to say Renaissance twice, but it was a nice touch.
It was.
Renaissance.
Well, there's a couple other things in here to first trim out why he needs the trading posts in the first place. Roads should not be expensive. Just saying that. If your internal trade routes, i.e. your road connections between your cities. If they are costing you money rather than making you money, you should not have built them. Only build roads between cities when the city connected to your capital will give you more money per turn than the road costs per turn. If you do it earlier than that, then you're doing it for a military reason or strategic reason, as in, you know, you want to be able to move units, but you don't want to be building roads for road's sakes. Building maintenance, yeah, that can get pretty nasty, but that's where you build your currency buildings. Go to currency quick, get your markets up. Banks are nice as well, and they come pretty quick. Trade routes, if you're lacking gold per turn, then you want trade routes. Find those super-powered trade routes, get those out there. There are map situations where you're not going to have that much money at all. So you want your East India Company up as quickly as possible to get AIs to send you those trade routes so that you can at least make some money off of it.
That's right, because you're going to get an extra 4 gold per turn for the city owner of the trade route, and then the other one gets 2 gold per turn from the trade route.
Yeah, and then there's the actual money from the trade route
itself.
Yeah, which is like only a couple gold per turn. But hey, a couple gold per turn pays for a couple of buildings. Tends to be worth it. The other thing to do is, of course, not build farms everywhere. just because you can build farms doesn't mean you should build farms.
Yeah, there's someone in this thread, Raven Magnus, who says, I only construct trading posts on tundra since I typically cut down jungles for farms. Oh, no.
Oh, that hurts on so many levels.
Yep.
No. You do not want plains farms. You do not want plains. And to me, actually, when it comes to how many trading posts do you build in your cities? How many jungle tiles do I have?
Yeah, that's usually about the right answer. Plains tiles, I probably would trading posts if I had nothing better to do. Only because if you go rationalism, which he did, you also get that science from trading posts. So those plains tiles start becoming useful, even if you can't necessarily pay for themselves due to the food side. But at the very least, you're getting gold and science and hammers and a point of food out of it.
You could also consider flat grassland without fresh water access. At least, like, without fresh water access, you're going to get hit by that. So long as you can actually grow to then be able to, you know,
use it.
Work the tiles,
yeah,
to get the science.
But yes, all jungles all the time. I mean, it's just obvious.
Yeah, for those people wondering, well, why is that? Because universities give you +2 science from jungle tiles worked by the city. And then they also, universities also give you 2 great scientist specialist slots. Which you can use for even more science output. He talks about, in terms of what he adopted here, I mean, rationalism. Okay, he's doing well for like the science issue. This really isn't addressing his question about gold, but it's like, okay, yeah, you're going to get the science output additional from rationalism, and then you go farther down in the rationalism tree, you can even get more science out of your universities. If he really is struggling for gold, the one thing that I don't understand that he really didn't explain, he talked about that he was surrounded by militaristic city-states in the corner of the map. So I'm presuming that he befriended most of them, if not all of them, for a decent portion of the game to go patronage. It doesn't even say how far he goes down patronage or anything else. But unless you're getting a lot of militaristic city-states and you're getting some good unique units out of that from being their friend, if not their ally, and you're still having gold problems in addition to what we said, might I suggest the commerce social policy?
Yeah. Or instead of giving gold and keeping all those units that they give you, if you have too many units because you have a lot of militaristic city states, you can always just gift them all back for a little bit of a influence boost.
And save on the unit maintenance.
Also keep in mind that anything that saves you money is just as good as things that make you money. So if you're going order, there are some tenants inside order that actually save you income. And they aren't the sexy ones that you would normally want to take in order. But if you are having gold per turn problems, order does actually have a few tenants that will benefit you. I'm thinking of the reduced building maintenance costs and stuff like that. And maybe you're just building too many buildings.
Yes, both of those things, or a combination of those things. You got to decide, okay, if I'm going to construct this building, either if I'm going to use the hammers to construct this building, or if I'm going to use the gold to buy this building, which if this person's having gold problems, he's probably not doing, I hope he's not doing, then you look at what benefit you're getting out of all that upfront cost, whether it's hammer or gold, and then there's also the maintenance associated with that. And not every city should have every building in it.
Yeah.
Look at that.
And of course, the most obvious, when in doubt, make a religion that has lots of money.
Tithe.
Yay!
money.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Woohoo! And for those listening wondering, what does tithe give me again?
Money.
money.
It's +1 for every 4 people following religion.
Yeah.
And if tithe is taken, it's a little sad face. But you could also go church property for +2 gold for each city following the religion. You know, you spread it. Or if that's taken too, or he's like, no, I can't spread my religion for whatever reason or not soon enough, then I guess you could take initiation rites, which will give you an infusion of gold when each city first converts to the religion.
There are ways to get cash. And a lot of it in Brave New World is definitely the trade route side.
Oh, in Civilization.
Okay. Yeah, we're talking about
we have a thread title here called Patch Dreams. This is my dream of a spring 2014 balance patch. Basically, what he wants is a spring for me, actually, is quite far away, but spring for the Northern Hemispherians. They kind of want sort of an updates and bug fixes and general changes. And some of these things that Ghostu has created or come up with aren't necessarily that bad at all. Me, personally, the only changes that I really want is to make culture a bit less tedious and a bit less sort of monotonous. And the World Congress not going against the 33%, merchant engineer, that World Congress resolution, because they always really just want more culture in the World Congress.
So you want better AI?
Oh, better AI. Yeah. And then there's that other bug which really annoys me, which is when you want someone to declare war on another civilization and you haven't met all these civilizations in the game yet. It shows you a full list of all the civilizations when you're doing a trade deal with an AI.
Yeah, I think most people, when they want the World Congress to be fixed, they actually want it to be fixed. Not so easy to win. It's actually become easier to win. And Brave New World changed it so that culture wasn't so pedantic like it was before. I'm actually okay with that switch. But yeah, the various things in the World Congress for rebalancing. Civs that are not going for culture shouldn't want more culture. They should want to do the whole more science and engineering.
I've never really met, other than an AI career, I've never really seen any AI vote for +33% more science, engineer, and merchant.
Yeah.
That agreement.
I think so. Balance wise, the game's shifted way too much to too many AIs are trying to go culture in the early game. And that's why they'll go against it, is that they spend the early game going culture, and their grand strategy inevitably hits that side of things in the early game. And that causes more balance problems because, I mean, really beating up on AIs that all went culture in the early game means that you could do it with composite bows because they won't have the military available. Or you just focus on science and you're way ahead and they're still thinking of archaeology when you're sitting there with artillery.
On the point of World Congress, Ghostu itemizes a number of points under World Congress and his entire list. I don't agree with everything he says, but I think it's presented well, so kudos to you. World Congress now allows a third civilization to propose resolutions upon becoming the United Nations, and then the United Nations allows a fourth civilization to propose resolutions upon the world reaching the information era, as opposed to the two we presently have right now. What I would like to see is, once you get to the United Nations, okay, now a third civilization can propose a resolution, but at World Congress and United Nations, if a civilization decides to pass on making a proposal, because sometimes it's like, there isn't anything I want to propose, why would I just propose something for the sake of it, then it can go to the next civilization to propose something. And if they decide they don't want to, then maybe there is only one resolution, or quite frankly, maybe there is nothing at all that's worthwhile proposing, particularly earlier on when it comes to the World Congress, which is why I think allowing a third civilization to propose a resolution, like right when the World Congress is founded, and then having a fourth later on is excessive.
Yeah, well, he meant third once it becomes the United Nations. So
I think it's pretty funny with two at the moment, when you have, especially if you want to have your world religion and somebody else proposes a luxury ban that the world doesn't want, and meanwhile you sneak in your world religion and you just use all your Diplo votes to vote for religion whilst everybody goes, hey, there's a new world religion? That sucks.
Yeah, no, see, I would definitely prefer the mechanic to be that everybody can vote on a resolution with their full amounts of votes per resolution. So if there's two resolutions up, you get to vote yes or no on one resolution and yes or no on the other resolution and not have to split votes. I think the split vote mechanic is just idiotic.
I completely agree with you.
It's dumb.
It's funny when you're doing it, but it's just devastating when you're like, oh, the international games have been going on and I just haven't been realizing it?
Huh. Should be yes or no, because that way you don't have those situations where it's like, I want to get this through, therefore I will put up something that everybody hates, and therefore they'll all vote for that, and blah, blah, blah. No, that's just idiotic. Let it go up or down based on each individual resolution, then you'll have more of a shot at having it look like the World Congress or the United Nations. Because, you know, no one stops and goes, oh, well, I can't vote on that because I'm putting all my effort on this one.
There's a particular point that I think Mackie will exercise her sass on. New resolution, the XCOM initiative.
Yes.
This project must be proposed and constructed prior to any XCOM squads being produced. The XCOM initiative may be proposed when any civilization has researched nanotechnology. So the winner gets the XCOM headquarters, appears in the capital, may construct XCOM squads in city. Silver prize, you get an XCOM outpost, a one-time research boost equivalent to 2 research agreements based on own science, and you get 2 free XCOM squads appear near the capital. Or the bronze prize, XCOM council member, 1 free XCOM squad appears near the capital.
What?
So, in other words, if you are not the winner, if you do not get the gold prize, then you get various degrees of booby prizes when it comes to XCOM squads.
That 2 research agreements.
Yeah. Are you kidding? What? That's not a booby prize.
I'm talking about XCOM squads specifically. I'm not getting to the point about the research agreements just yet.
Even the XCOM squads themselves aren't a booby prize if you can't build them otherwise.
And if your neighbor doesn't have any units even remotely that powerful.
That's kind of like, what's that freedom tenet where you get 6 free foreign legions and everybody else is running around with a spearman and you go, hey, guess what, Shaka?
Splat.
XCOM squads, just produce them like we have already been producing them. Forget this resolution. Forget it.
I don't know. I don't really care, but I mean, realistically, if you put it in as a resolution, you'll never see XCOM units in the game because no one would bother doing that resolution.
It's more of an Easter egg than anything.
Yeah. It's bad enough that you have to want to go over to that part of the tech tree to be able to use XCOM squads in the first place. And for pretty much all of the victory conditions aside from tech, you're not going anywhere near that part of the tech tree.
So, I would like to have a more World Congress resolutions, and you could, you know, and also an option to opt out of the World Congress if, you know, or have other people vote you out of the World Congress and an embargo or something is put on you. I would like some more resolutions, like, you know, something like a Red Cross that boosts health, or maybe a you have to liberate a particular puppeted state or something. That would be very funny. And if you choose to ignore it, then you're kicked out of the World Congress.
Comes down to a game mechanics issue. I know people have talked about kicking people out of the World Congress or being able to ignore resolutions, but then that kind of makes the World Congress completely useless. I mean, I would agree with the concept of, say, if somebody's being a big bully, then you push a World Congress vote through that has everybody in the world declare war on them until they give up something. And then you can have coalition wars, basically, against big, bad, nasty people.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I would like a force liberate, though. That'd be very funny.
Yeah, I can understand the feeling why people want to be able to remove themselves from the World Congress, but that doesn't address the issues with the World Congress. That just kind of makes it worse.
Players would just leave the World Congress if they weren't going Diplo, and who cares if you get embargoed? You have city-states, and if you're going for domination, you're just going to kill everybody anyway, so it doesn't really affect you.
Speaking of affecting you, if you're going for domination, World Congress, new resolution, human rights movement, -5 happiness in every occupied city, -3 happiness from every puppet city, available after any civilization has researched radio.
I'm not sure about puppet cities, because the whole concept of puppet cities would hurt order.
And Venice.
In Venice, yeah. Hey, Venice, nice little empire you have there that you got peacefully gone. Yeah,
Venice will not be grateful if you propose this.
No, really?
Venice will nuke you. Occupied cities, though, cities are only occupied for the short couple seconds it takes you to buy that courthouse. So, don't think that really matters much. You could have the World Congress double up that penalty, whereas you have culture already reducing that penalty if you have culture domination over somebody. So that could work. That puts a push between diplomacy and culture on that front. That could work to slow things down a little bit.
I would like some more resolutions, though, just to make things a bit better, just to make things a bit more flavorful.
Yeah, volume of resolutions would be nice, more because then you don't see ban luxury constantly. Because they ran out of stuff to choose. So let's ban another luxury just for giggles.
Another thing that Ghostu mentions is about various updates to civilizations like Hakkapeliittas from Sweden, just making them better. Right now, apparently, it doesn't have the combat bonus when a great general is an adjacent tile, and right now it only works if they're stacked. Be a pretty good change to have.
If it starts on the tile with a hack, gets the movement of the hack. So you can move that great general around to all your hacks in the neighborhood and give them the bonus. So it's a little extra micro, but the great general has all that extra movement. You know, you can move it around to give them all the bonus rather than just needing it in the area. Removed Finnish city names from city list.
Whatevs.
People.
Your Finland Sweden isn't Swedish enough, sirs.
Finland was owned by Sweden for the longest time, especially during the period where Sweden was is considered for the Civ. So I know people are going to hate me for it, but get over it.
Making Rome a bit more interesting with legions and ballistas starting with cover.
Plus 33% defense against range attacks. No, thanks.
Really need the legion having that?
No.
I don't think you need the ballista having that either.
It might be just an anecdotal thing, but I've never really seen an AI Rome being that successful, especially on true start locations, but that's true start locations.
They're a real pain.
And ballistas are just a big pain anyways.
Yeah.
For Byzantium, Cataphract replaces the knight instead of the horseman with a corresponding strength increase. No.
I'm okay with a cataphract where it is, because it's like a swordsman, but faster.
Yeah, I don't think it was ever meant to be a knight.
Well, it's an early knight, and that's the thing. So if cataphract had slightly higher strength bonus, then it would be cooler. But maybe cataphract comes at civil service, but as a knight replacement.
Yeah, that could work.
It's sort of like the Berserker now, is where they're going with it.
So what are your thoughts on the unique ability being the including a free great profit at theology?
Troll face!
No. Or the fact that their bonus belief granted by the unique ability may be any belief previously chosen in another religion, thereby reducing the urgency with which Byzantine players need to found a religion. Look, you already get a bonus follower belief upon founding a religion. No!
Too much!
So many AI, you don't see Byzantium actually founding a religion.
Yeah, sometimes they go a little too slow on it. In that respect, you need to attune the Byzantine AI to focus more on the religion, and not just by trying to finish piety, because that's how I usually see it, trying to get the religion, is finish piety, get the great profit that way. If the Byzantine AI gets a pantheon, then they are more than likely going to have a religion, especially if they take something that benefits getting a religion.
Berserkers were mentioned in relation to cataphract, so let's jump to Denmark on his list. That doesn't seem to be in any particular order. Berserkers now retain the +1 movement promotion on upgrade. No, I don't think so.
When they upgrade to Norwegian ski infantry? That already have a movement bonus? No. I'm good with Berserkers having extra move the way they are.
Or how about Denmark now gains double gold from pillaging improvements?
Yeah.
Yeah, when melee units pay no movement point cost to pillage, yeah, part of the unique ability? No! Oh dear.
Here is my economic plan. Please stand aside while I pillage the empire.
And Norwegian Ski Infantry now have the Drill 1 promotion, which is +50% combat strength when fighting in rough terrain, which would be in addition to their Snow Tundra Hill +25% combat bonus and double movement. Wow.
I see no point to it.
There is a consensus that Denmark isn't the most fun civ, or just it's the one of the most boring civs.
Oh yeah, I mean the Norwegian Ski Infantry are just kind of like, so you mean I can move twice as fast in snow, huh? But you can also move twice as fast on hills, so that's kind of the point. I think Denmark's doing a little better with Berserkers being at metal casting now.
Yeah, because they were only available later, originally.
Steel.
And there's also the you're attacking with siege weapons from embarking, so when you found a catapult or a trebuchet onto like a tile, you can still set up and fire all within that same turn.
Yep. I mean, that's just superpowered.
It's broken, to say the least.
Especially if there's lots of stuff around, because you can disembark, move forward, fire, next turn, run back into the water.
Yeah, just to take the firepower. It's insane.
Yep.
For Greece, companion cavalry now carry over their great general generation bonuses when upgrading.
Well, if you do that, then you have to do that for every civ that has the great general generation bonus, because it's a promotion. So if they fix it for companion cav, that it upgrades then all of them get it.
I would put fix in giant quotation marks there. Hoplites now upgrade to longswords instead of pikemen.
What?
No. Hoplites gain the phalanx promotion, which increases combat strength by 10% for every adjacent unit with a phalanx promotion. This promotion carries over on upgrade to longswords. Wow.
A longsword phalanx. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah.
Visually, that'd just be crazy.
They tie swords onto the end of their spears for extra range.
Yep.
My take on a lot of these is I would like Civilization V civilizations to resemble Civilization Revolution civilizations, where there is just so much you can do. It's just like OP in some respect. That's crazy. No. Brazil. Carnival now boosts production of all great people by 25%, not just writers, artists, and musicians.
No.
That's not what the There's carnival a reason is. Specialized into that.
And Prakana now gains a 15% bonus when fighting in foreign lands, in addition to the 25% bonus in its own.
It was an expeditionary force, so I can agree with that.
I'm okay with
it. Yeah, see, I'd okay if you switch the two. Yeah, switch out the defensive one for the offensive one. That would probably be better. Planning.
I just have no idea why they create golden ages. I can tell gameplay-wise, but just thematically and just synergistically, it just doesn't really make sense for me.
It's part of the package. And it's different. No, I mean, no one else other than, the new American Minutemen. Minutemen. No one else had it at the time.
Japan, zero production cost reduced by 25%.
Yes, if you have something with zero production cost, you should reduce it by another 25%.
As in the unique unit.
No.
The unit does not require oil, so zero is just... It's fine.
It's
Do we like
crap.
The zero just to anyway?
No.
No, but...
Then why not buff it and make it just something like... I think the zero just needs to be looked at just in general. It seems like so lackluster.
Well, the problem is it comes so late, no one ever used fighters, blah, blah, blah. Although, now that combat mechanics around air units and interceptions and stuff like that has finally been fixed to actually exist, rather than just say they exist, Zero does have a bit more use now.
Mm.
But it's unlikely you're going to have a lot of them.
Yeah. Make it just so it's not just a regular sort of fighter. I think it would be good if you kind of change it so it's just so different to what the actual fighter does anyway, just to give it a bit more flair.
Second for Japan, unique ability now grants one additional culture per coastal city in addition to the fishing boat and atoll bonuses. This is intended to add more reliability to the unique ability without being substantially changed. Okay.
I like coastal settling. I think Japan should have a coastal settling thing as opposed to just being in random places, but that's me.
They do have a coastal settling benefit.
Oh, yeah, the start bias. But No, I like the incentive to just go full coastal.
I'm not sure extra point culture per coastal city is a good plan, but...
Well, culture
settling would be nice.
Yeah, but more incentivizing the coastal side.
For Morocco, the Kasbah improvement now gains additional gold and economics and is treated as a trading post for all social policy purposes.
Did someone explode?
No.
Would you like to expound on that?
Would you like to repeat that?
Kasbah plus a certain wonder. Yeah, just slightly more than a wee bit overpowered already. It doesn't need more. Now, granted, I mean, Morocco without deserts is like crap, but Morocco does have deserts around. And if they can build the Kasbah, then they already have a lot going for it, especially if they get Desert Faith or
Petra.
There are ways to grow the Kasbah already in game without adding even more, especially science. Seriously, who learns in a Kasbah?
The Kasbah needed more things to make it awesome. What?
Yeah. The dream patch, after all. You gotta go with your dreams.
Yeah,
I mean, you might as well make the chateau act as a trading post at that point.
So for the other Morocco point is that the unique ability now scales by 1 point of culture and gold per 2 eras, which
I'm not against that one.
Yeah, I think the current Morocco UA just isn't really to my liking whatsoever. And it's really only useful early game because the plus one cultural or whatever it already is kind of, by the time you get lots and lots of trade routes up, it's kind of...
The impact is small.
Yeah, the impact is small. fairly just non-existent when it comes to all the other culture output if you're going to go culture victory.
Yeah.
Under religion, religious settlements increased to plus 25% tile acquisition instead of 15%. Okay, so can I take that and I'll get the tradition opener and maybe I'll be the Shoshone and no.
Oh my god.
Actually, no, they do have a point on that one. There's no point in taking religious settlements unless the bonus is actually good enough to outweigh taking any other possible. And when it comes to the math, 15% doesn't do so well with integers. So it's pretty crap, and once you get it into the game and go for those tile rates, unless you're hitting your, like, 100th tile, you know, okay, so your 10th or 11th tile acquisition, that's when religious settlements really starts to kick in being useful number, but before that, it's horrifyingly crap.
I'd support this sort of increasing to 25% because, you know, the Shoshone would make you really sort of good use of it, but so does Egypt with the Monument of the Gods, which 15% classical and ancient wonders you can build faster. Stacking that with tradition and stacking that with their UA, it's pretty damn good. So I like the religious settlement idea.
Goddess of Love gains an additional happiness per every 6 citizens in a city after the first. So, for example, a city with 18 population will gain plus 3 happiness. And so this would be in addition to the plus 1 happiness from cities with population of 6 or higher. I think it's fine the way it is.
Yeah, that seems like it get a little overpowered really quick.
It's a temporary one, though. I mean, you can take that or you can take something that gives you extra happiness constantly. In this case, it's... Some pantheons are really more important than others.
Without a doubt.
And so you kind of do have to adjust some of the other ones that seem sort of powerful at first in the early game, but then after that, kind of like... Although, 1 every 6, I'd maybe go 1 every 10.
Well, see, yeah, I'm open to changes, but that just seemed to be a change that was just, like Mackie said, was just a little too strong.
Is it too strong? Like, how would it be too strong?
Well, at 18 pop, extra 3 happiness, that covers the city. And if you think of Gandhi, that can cover more than the city very quickly all by itself, because you're also going tradition for the extra one. There is an upper limit to the happiness you can soak into a city. So, and I do worry about happiness-related boosters, because happiness can get a little silly after a bit, and then you're not worried about anything expansion-wise.
A Dance of the Aurora now adds plus 1 food to all tundra tiles with fresh water in addition to its faith-generating effects. Okay.
So you actually want to make tundra tiles useful?
Gasp, I know, right?
That would be cool.
And if it does have fresh water, it's already getting an extra food when you farm it, when you get to civil service.
There's not so many rivers in the tundra that this would be overpower. That's
don't forget the lakes.
Well, I don't see a lot of lakes, honestly. But then that's only 6 tiles, and you're not necessarily going to have all of them in your city, depending.
Yeah, it's questionable.
Be good if you're the Aztecs, though.
Well.
You can always think of civilization exceptions, of course, which must be taken into consideration, of course. And then finally, 3 new suggestions for pantheons. Fenlore, plus 2 faith and plus 1 food per lake and marsh tile.
Ooh. I'd stop at lake. Not add the
lake, marsh. Lake, okay, not and marsh. And can it be just plus 1 faith?
No, I'd be plus 2 faith with lake tile because there's not that many lakes on the map. I mean, there are some.
Yeah, I see a minute ago you're arguing there's too many with the lakes in the tundra. Make up your mind.
No, lakes in tundra. And remember, it says fresh water. It doesn't necessarily say.
This would be good for the Aztecs too.
Yeah, thinking the marsh tile with the whole, you know, Dutch.
Ooh. Holders everywhere.
Ceremonial vestments. Plus 1 faith and culture per silk and cotton. Yeah, I'm fine with that, because we've got the Goddess of Festivals for plus 1 faith and culture from wine and incense.
Something a little different to do with your plantation resources.
Maybe not faith and culture. We already have that.
For wine and incense, but not for silk and cotton.
I know. That's my point.
What's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Maybe culture and production, or faith in production, or something. Like, mix it up a little.
And lastly, animal sacrifice, plus 2 faith per whales and ivory, and then plus 1 faith per horses, deer, cattle, and sheep. Let's stop at the whales and ivory.
Yeah, that's already a little much.
There's already pearls and gems. Again,
I could see the deer, cattle, horses, and sheep thing, because there's not much else to do, I think, with those. But and the whales and ivory? No.
I would go, if any, plus two faith for gems and pearls already exists. So, yeah, you don't want to make
you're
it.
Sacrificing powerful. Animals, wouldn't that give you food as well?
Yeah, I mean, why not plus one food?
Maybe they don't sacrifice the animals sanitarily, so then it's not appropriate to eat. Did you ever think of that?
Or maybe have silk next to your city and you get plus something to your shrine or temple.
Conclude on a future episode.
In the news today, all of weeks ago, well, last week or something, I don't know.
Yeah, since we recorded the last episode.
Yeah, Girl Friday, or GA1 Friday, whatever.
Or Kate.
Otherwise known as Kate, decided to go troll CFC by responding to a thread about the Bison Depot, and said, as mentioned by Eagle Pursuit, she's going to give more information about Civilization 5 Complete as it becomes available. She can confirm that Civ 5 Complete is coming soon and will be available on February the 4th, i.e. a couple days from now, in North America and, yeah, the rest of the world.
Well, it was worse for me because the way that we do dates in Australia is that we put the logical way, which is to put the day first, then the month. So yeah. I'm just like, what is coming out on the 7th month?
I know. I said on like the 2nd of April, huh?
That's how I read it too.
The best way to do it is year, month, day. Year, month, day is the best dating method. I'm sorry, so, but that is the reality. If you sort it, it will give you things in proper order consistently as long as you put a zero between single digit numbers.
So the troll today is that she didn't actually post this on 2K forums at all. At all. One of the community members went and posted it back on 2K forums. So, yeah. Have fun with that.
Don't you forget about me.
That caused a little mini controversy.
Just a tiny controversy. The question is there going to be a Civ 5 Complete again?
Yep.
Duh.
Sure. Well, we had gold.
Also mentioned that, that Conquest of the New World Deluxe will be free for all people with Brave New World, and as a bonus gift, anyone who buys Brave New World from now on will also get that Conquest of the New World Deluxe as well.
Oh yeah, that too.
Kate confirmed that on January 29th, after 8 days before talking about, I like Civilization 5 Complete is coming soon and will be available on. Yeah, Kate, you can just drop the coming soon part because you're specific about the dates, you know, just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, this was the reveal of what was actually codenamed Bison. Ooh. As people in the Civ community forums had scoured out some time before. I think it was more than a month ago, wasn't it?
Well, that's the thing about Steam database. Steam and Valve just do not protect their depots at all. It's very easy to see what depots exist around a certain game, and then, you know, you'll know if there's DLC or something coming.
Like, I'm not going to lie, I pretty much checked that Bison Depot thread every single day, because just like I followed the release of Brave New World, I thought, oh, I'll get ahead of the game this time.
No,
but I still think it's got to be Bison for a reason. I think Conquest of the New World will probably have some Bison assets, which will be good for us modders who are doing indigenous civs that utilize bisons and bison jumps and bison pounds and stuff like that.
Speaking of mistakes, Quintilus had noted in the thread about mistakes from Amazon. Amazon US had talked about Civilization 5 Complete, and in their entry described as it including Warlords and Beyond the Sword, which is so funny.
Yeah.
Well done.
That's good stuff. The whole push for Kate to actually confirm these things is that a few certain companies who are selling it went and released the information that they were selling it before 2K got around to telling anybody that they even existed.
I think 2K had some choice fingers, or perhaps a choice finger for them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. To sum up, there will be a new scenario, or at least an update to Conquest of the New World. There will be a Civ 5 Complete, so you can, you know, buy that and then wait for the extra complete after, you know, it got completed.
Vassals thing, we got called out on Reddit yesterday, so it's like,
No, it was Reddit called us out.
Oh no.
Must defend our honor.
What? Somebody actually say something?
I'm not sure if the mention of us in this vassal thread thing is really quote unquote calling us out as much as just mentioning
it's more,
us.
I don't know. I find it.
No, it's calling us out, Phil. Come on now. I must have controversy.
It's not like, dear Polycarp.
We can have plenty of controversy. Don't worry, but not that way. We need to fabricate our controversy in a plausible manner.
Someone needs to post nudes. I vote Dan.
At least something that people cannot just look at and immediately realize that we are wrong. We have to fabricate these things properly.
We are.
What do you mean called out?
I will fabricate a claim on your land.
I have no idea what's happening.
What are you talking about? All I can find on this is that they said Brave New World was the last expansion for Civ 5, and it was on a Polycast episode. That was it.
Keep going.
No, I don't want to.
I did a search for the word Polycast. It only comes up a couple times in the thread. There's another one that's on a Polycast episode. Can't remember which one. We'll have a look. Edit might be episode 178. And then...
Keep going.
I agree with you all, but it seems some pro Civ players hated Castle States. Yeah, you Polycast.
He means Vassal States. Yeah, Susanna, looking at you, Polycast. That's the calling out. I'm calling in a call out.
Fine. Good enough.
Very odd definition of call out.
Which of us hated on Vassal States again? I don't remember.
It was probably you.
All of us to varying degrees, but you're the champion, Phil, so that's why I signed the topic to you.
Fine. Okay, fine. I'll have a field day with this.
I figured you would.
Should I focus on just the fact that we got called out, or should I focus on the entire thread in general over here on Reddit?
Well, Dan says we got called out, but it was more like a mention.
Well, I think it's somewhere in between because, you know, he did put the pro in quotation marks. Yeah. So. But yeah, basically, it's a thread over on Reddit started by Mananin. Manana.
Okay. Banana?
Hopefully, Civ 6, apparently, Civ 5 is obnoxious to mod for, especially when compared to Civ 4. So just basically a discussion on whether another Civ 5 expansion or DLC or if they're going to Civ 6. But I think what Dan wanted to note here is the vassal state stuff. Way down in the thread, started by Brave New Justin. I agree with you all, but it seems like some pro Civ players hated castles states. I'm looking at you, Polycast. Why is it all disliked? I always thought it neat. I'm not sure what a castles state is. Is that like in chess where you castle like to the king or queen side? Hmm. And people compare Civ to chess a whole lot, so you know maybe he was going for something like that. No.
Yeah, I think he meant, of course, vassal states, which the short version for me is this. I liked the concept, but I didn't like part of the implementation in Civ 4.
Yeah, as far as trying to do that in Civ 5 would go, it would be miserable because you have to balance the game around their existence. Civ 4 made that precise mistake. They never, ever balanced the game around the existence of vassal states. Basically, what you would do is just chain them and end the game quickly every time. And if you put them in Civ 5, well, that would happen there too. You'd get a vassal and just start rolling with your vassals.
If you want to see what the vassal state system would look like in Civ 5, Putmolk, who's also a moderator of the Civ subreddit, he's released the Civ 4 diplomacy features, which has stuff like tech and map trading, but it also has the ability to add vassal states. And
that's called puppets anyways, so...
Yeah, but some of the features are kind of nice, and if you want to play with that, there's always that option there. Modding's a whole new world.
Different from puppets, and they're
fantastic
much faster.
One of you.
They're much faster than puppets, because basically the entire Civ is just kept intact.
And they're forced to declare war when you do.
Yeah. Well, realistically, point is just you get big enough and all of a sudden you just start vassaling everybody. Whee!
You don't even have to be that big. With the amount of abuses available to you in Civ 4 surrounding vassal states, you could do some incredible stuff.
Mind you, there was a couple of runaways in a game that I've had with vassal states where the Greece just started vassaling everybody in the AI. This is Civ 5 with the mod. And Greece was just so just ridiculously overpowered because everybody just fell to his feet.
But also, vassals in Civ 4 were bug-ridden, and they never, ever worked properly. You had problems like, if your vassal got killed, it would actually make the game think you were stronger because for getting a new vassal, because it raised the average power of all civilizations because one of the civilizations was eliminated. Therefore, your new target, who previously would not be willing to vassal to you, is willing to vassal to you because he killed off your vassal. Then there was like the whole land target check that would make it so much more willing to vassal. The fact that human vassals that were from capitulation virtually never broke free. So you could do crap like taking a warmonger as a vassal and giving all its cities back and essentially feeding it EU4 style and letting it win conquest for you. There was basically vassals made winning any diplomatic victory trivial. It didn't really matter.
It's like, yeah, I didn't conquer the world. My vassal did. Don't blame me.
I'm serious. If you were a little bit fortunate and you were able to vassal somebody early on deity and just feed them, it would get stupid.
Really, it becomes fun when your vassal asks for their independence and you decline and they declare war. So there's, you know, like a war for independence and stuff like that. That's when it gets really fun.
If you make them like you enough, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, some polycast topics age as well as bananas, but others age, well, like a fine wine. So if you want to hear more about us talk about vassals and in the context of Civilization IV, the good, bad, and the ugly, oh, the ugly, there's episodes 23, 46, 64, 66, and 99.
I, for one, don't like aging like a banana, but I do anyway.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
I saw a thread on Reddit recently that when you're founding a religion and naming it, you can actually use icons. If you use the parentheses, it can capital letters icon underscore money, and then another parentheses, you can actually get the gold icon inside of your game. So you can call your civ money and have the O as gold as well. So money, money, money.
Thank you all for joining us. This has been Polycast episode 192. I'm the main team, and I was joined by Dan Q.
Break out!
Makalua.
Really? You're going for a really old, what is that, 80s reference there?
Medjin.
Go for the 60s.
And guest co-host T. Pangolin.
Kaka, kaka!
Well, let's get there. We are past our arranged starting time.
Oh, people just assume Mackie was late. It's fine.
Yeah,
it's
okay. I mean, that is the most typical occurrence.
It's tradition.
Too cheap to get it done.
Speaking of getting it done, guest. So this is where you do the introduction now.
Oh, right. So am I introducing myself or am I introducing everybody else?
Both. Everybody.
I was trying a food thing, you know, with the spices, but...
Do you want me to do the segue?
Yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of spicing things up in Mad Jim's nuts, we have Spice Islanders and Nutmeg. Talking, speaking of Indonesia. What do you guys think about Indonesia, Mad?
Excellent.
I'm sorry, my brain kind of went ... after the...
We're talking about Indonesia this time, and of course, the Spice Islanders' unique... Whoa, what the frick? Go away.
That is kind of what I say whenever I roll Indonesia on random. I'm like, what the frick, restart? This, I tell you what.
Apparently, the ad decided to stop on my side. Went full blast. Speaking of getting echoed.
Echo, echo.
Are we still getting an echo?
No, this is a segue.
Oh, this is a segue. Oh, okay. How am I gonna work with this echo?
I can't say I blame T. Pangolin here. Yeah. Wait, this
right,
is what?
Yes, okay.
Welcome to my club, Magin.
I can work with this echo.
Companion Cavalry.
I dream of this UI update to my game as a major patch.
Indeed. Yeah, Companion Cavalry.
It's a little thing sometimes, you know?
Yeah, no, it's good. There's no reason not to put it in there.
And Civ is all about little tiny things, you know, micromanaging everything.
Dan's talking. Shut up, Dan.
Yeah. It goes well
Stop
with the whole micro nation in the room theme too.
Right. Go for it, Dan.
So would you be willing to come back?
Me?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, everybody else.
If you'd have me.
And then with that, podcast team.
Yeah. We will come back. Nah, we're done. See you later.
Record date February 1st, 2014. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.